A little boy was overheard by his parents one day at home while he was playing church. And as he was playing church, he began to sing one of his favorite songs. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and okay. Trust and okay. You know, he didn't get the words exactly right, because that's not the way the song is written, but I think he got the meaning. I think he got right at the heart of the meaning of what the song is really trying to tell us and what the Bible tries to tell us about trust and okay. Did anyone notice, you get a quarter if you did, that there's a different banner up here? Oh, Miss Jean, Miss Kath, I'm going to be up more money than I thought. There's a new banner up here because we are starting a new theme this year. You know, we tried last year with a theme about singing and doing a song a month, and that worked well for the first 3 months of the year. Then COVID came along, and things changed a little bit, so we will pick that up again. We didn't throw the banner away. We'll try that one again another year. This year, and we're starting a little late, I'm sorry about that. This is the first Sunday in February. But for the remainder of this year, the 11 months of this year, this idea of trustworthy, this is a trustworthy saying, especially the word trustworthy and trust, is what we want to think about and focus on some of our lessons and pour into our hearts, into our minds from the Scriptures about what it means to be trustworthy. God is trustworthy. You and I should be trustworthy. And this is the approach that we want to take as we use this as a theme for this year and the ways that we want to use it during 2021. But you know, before we can really study the idea of trustworthy, and we kind of want to kick this off this morning and think about it this morning from this standpoint, before we can really study this word trustworthy itself, we know that you must have trust. You must really think about trust before you can be trustworthy, before we can think about God being trustworthy and all the other meanings and applications in Scripture of this term and this concept. We know that trust is vital, and trust is something that we need to understand. And by the way, in most of our English Bibles, the words, particularly in the New Testament, that you find for trust and faith are usually translated from the same Greek word, the same word in the original. Not exclusively, but often it is the case when you see the word trust and you see the word faith, not necessarily even in the same verse, but when you see them in the New Testament, they generally have been translated into English from the same term in the original, at least the root or part of a derivative of that same term. So when we study about trust and trustworthy, we also are really studying about faith and faithfulness and being faithful. And so what I want us to do this morning, we begin here with an introduction to trustworthy, trust, really faith and faithfulness. And as we begin here, we want to have an introduction to this, a definition of it, and a little bit of an elaboration, particularly about this idea of faith being the fundamental core of what we want to study this year as we think about trustworthy. So, the most obvious place to go, I suppose, as we begin a lesson like this and a year like this, is Hebrews chapter 11. We want to look at the first three verses, particularly of Hebrews chapter 11, because this is the obvious beginning place. And we might say this would be the first division of our sermon. We're going to have two directions this morning, two divisions of the sermon. This first one being the obvious beginning place for our definition, Hebrews chapter 11. And then also from this chapter, without elaborating in great detail on every single verse, the second part of the lesson, we want to ask some obvious questions about faith. So this is the obvious beginning place to define faith. And then we want to ask, secondly, some obvious questions that help us understand and define faith. And when we say that, we're defining trust. We're defining what it means to be faithful. We're defining what it means to be trustworthy. So as we go to this obvious text, Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 and following. Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained good testimony. By faith we understand that the worlds were formed by the Word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. And as we look at this classic definition, this biblical definition of faith, I want to share a little bit with you from a little more authoritative sources on the original language of the New Testament. One of the word studies of many years and has been authority for many years is someone with the last name Vincent. And when you look at Vincent's word study of this particular text and defining faith, he has this to say about verse 1 of Hebrews 11. It is important that the preliminary definition, this is Hebrews 11 verse 1, it is important that the preliminary definition be clearly understood, since the following examples, that's the remainder of the chapter, all those names, the following examples illustrate it. The key is furnished by verse 27. Verse 27 says what? Seeing Him who is invisible. The key to understanding this is in verse 27, seeing Him who is invisible. Faith apprehends as real fact what is not revealed to the senses. It rests on that fact, acts upon that fact, and is upheld by that fact in the face of all that seems to contradict it. Faith is real seeing. Seeing Him who is invisible. The words in verse 1, I think we need to spend a little bit of time thinking about. You notice it says, now faith is the, most translations say, substance of things hoped for. I have a center column reference in my Bible that also says it is the realization of things hoped for. You may have a translation that says faith is the assurance of things hoped for. What does the word mean when we look at and think about the word substance as we're defining faith, trust, trustworthy, and faithfulness? What does the word substance mean? It's kind of an interesting word in the original. It's a compound word, actually, in the original language that means to stand. Part of it means to stand, and it means under. So you take that compound word, it means to stand under, which is a foundation. Because a foundation stands under the building. The walls of this building, this roof of this building, would not be standing were it not for a good foundation, something standing under it. And so faith is the substance. It is the thing that stands under the foundation, the realization, the assurance. Another authority on the original language of the Bible, in a work by two men named Moulton and Milligan, they say that the term has a legal context in the first century. There are examples of it being used, this word used outside of scriptures in the first century in a legal context. And this is what they mean by that. They say it stands for the whole body of documents bearing on the ownership of a person's property deposited in archives and forming evidence of ownership. And then they make an interesting suggestion about it in that context. They say it's a legal term, and that legal term, foundation, standing under, that legal term refers to all the documents, all the documentation that can be put together to prove that someone owns something. And Moulton and Milligan, in their work on this verse and on this word, they make the interesting suggestion that it's the title deed. You probably have a title to your car, if it's paid for. You have a title to your house, if it's paid for. You have title deeds to things that you own. And if there's ever a question of ownership of your car or your house or something that requires a title, a legal documentation, you can pull that out and you can say, see right here's my name. You know, here's where it was notarized. Here's where it was signed off on by the lawyers and the judges and everyone else. Here's the deed. Here's the title deed to prove what? That I own this car, or I own this house, or I own this property. And the suggestion is made that faith is the title deed of things hoped for. It shows that I have ownership of the things that I hope for. And that's why I think some translations put assurance or realization. This is definitive. This is recorded. This is an absolute, you might say. It is the title deed to what I'm hoping for and longing for. It bears proof and shows proof that I have a valid claim. That valid claim is based on and starts with my faith, my trust in God. Because He is faithful and He is trustworthy. And so now I have a title deed to show that I can access and that I have claim to everything that God has given me. And that starts with my faith. The next word we want to think about, evidence. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And again, you may have a different word there, or something different terminology in there. Maybe confidence of things not seen. And again, the word evidence here is a proof. Evidence is a proof by something that is tested. And it is a proof of whatever is tested. We see that which is invisible, and here's the proof of that. Here's the reality of that. Some translations have the word conviction. It is the conviction. Faith is the title deed, the substance, the realization of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Again, verse 27, seeing Him who is invisible. And everything that seems to fly in the face and contradict faith is sustained when we realize what it really means. That there is an assurance. There is a realization. There is a conviction. There is a title deed of ownership, an absoluteness, a firmness. And that's what faith is. Faith is not something so much tangible as it goes beyond even our senses. Faith is not something so much that you know, you can put it in a box and you can say, here's what it is. Faith is something that it grows and develops and matures in our hearts and our minds, yes. But it's not just totally a subjective thing that's a warm fuzzy out there that's impossible to define, because the Bible defines it. And the Bible defines it with concrete terms about assurance, conviction, the title deed, the ownership, the absolute nature of it. And all of this is incorporated and defines our English words and our Bibles of faith and trust. Like I said, it's often the same word. Faith and trust. We want to look even a little more at this tonight about what faith is and some of the components of faith. And so this is actually kind of a part one of a two-part lesson, but they're independent of one another. They can stand alone from one another. But we're going to build some more on this tonight as well. But this is what we might say is the the evidence, the conviction, which produces assurance. You see, if we have conviction about the things not seen, if we have that conviction of the things, or the evidence and conviction of things not seen, that will produce in us assurance, substance, the title deed. And that is our faith, and how our faith helps us make it through in our relationship with God. Look at verse 6 as well, as we're thinking about defining from this most obvious beginning place. Verse 6 tells us, he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. That's incorporated in the definition of faith. That's incorporated in the definition of trust. That's incorporated in what we're studying right now from this particular chapter. And as we think about what the text is telling us here and what the text is saying to us here, the statement is universal in its application and it is timeless. In other words, it is an absolute statement. The idea is, without faith, it is impossible to please him. That's an absolute statement. It is a timeless statement. It is universal in its application and meaning. You see, verse 1 defines it. Verse 27 elaborates on it a little bit, gives us another nuance and shade of the meaning of seeing him who is invisible. And verse 6 tells us about the necessity of it. Because without faith, without this assurance, without this conviction, without this title deed, you go and try to show somebody you own a car that you don't have a title to. You go and try to take some land that you don't have proof of ownership for. Without that, then you have nothing. And without faith, without all of this, it is impossible to please him. You know, that doesn't really open itself up to a lot of different interpretations, does it? It is impossible. It doesn't say, oh, it's hard. It doesn't say it's a challenge. It doesn't say it seems like it's impossible, but it can be done. What does it say? Without faith, what? It is impossible. It is impossible to please him. Now, the opposite of faith is unbelief. Now, don't get overly concerned if you have doubt sometimes. Doubt and unbelief are not the same thing. Hebrews chapter 3 and 4 tell us about the condemnation of the children of Israel that we read back in the Old Testament, and it does not say that they were condemned and punished because of doubt. It says they were condemned and punished because of what? Read Hebrews 3 and 4. Unbelief. The opposite of faith is unbelief. So without faith, it is impossible to please him, because that means what? We don't believe. We don't believe in him. Whether we refuse to believe in him by choices that we make for various reasons, we don't believe. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must what? And here's the absoluteness. Believe that he is. And that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. There is diligence on our part, diligence demanded on our part when we seek God. It's not just a matter of, I'll wake up one day and poof, I'll understand all of this some incredible way. It's not just a matter that we casually and offhandedly approach this. It's not just a matter of we'll do this once or twice a year. But the text tells us that we have to diligently seek God. There's a determination. There is something that drives us to seek God. And we must believe that he is. One more reference to another scholar in the original language, and this is from a man named Kenneth Woost. I think is how you pronounce his name, but it's. He has a work on much of the New Testament, if not all of it, in the Greek language, and then translates it into English with some more of the literal meaning of things that are not often expressed sometimes in our English translations. And on this particular verse, I want to just read to you Hebrews 11, verse 6, what this man says. But without faith, it is impossible to please him at all. For he who comes to God must of necessity in the nature of the case. That's what the word means. That's what the phrase means. Must of necessity in the nature of the case believe that he exists and that he becomes a rewarder of those who diligently seek him out. Must of necessity of the case. This is universal. It is timeless. It has application to all men. And so now, based on that definition, based on what we have looked at from Hebrews chapter 1, chapter 11, verse 1, verse 6, and verse 27, and then knowing that verse 3 tells us, by faith we understand something. By faith we understand the worlds were formed by the Word of God, and that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. You know, if God made the world, if God did anything, but particularly as we think about this verse, if God made the world out of tangible things that man could already touch and feel and demonstrate with the five senses or any one of the five senses, if God made things out of something that already existed, if God made something out of the world, out of things that we already knew about and out of things that we could already talk about and we already could see and learn about, then there would be no need for faith. But God made things out of things that are not visible. And we see Him who is invisible. And from that, we have assurance and conviction that God is trustworthy. That if He did all these things, and that if His Word is the Word that created the world, and that He is the one that is responsible for making all that we see and know about, then we trust Him. And we put our faith, our hope in Him. Because the evidence, the conviction is there that we can lay claim with the title deed to everything that God has provided and that everything that God says. And so with that in mind, based on that definition, we have to ask ourselves this question. Do I view God as trustworthy? Do I recognize God as faithful? Do I trust Him? Do I? Do we? Do we trust God? And as we ponder that question, we merge into the second part of this lesson about asking some obvious questions. First, there's the obvious definition, the obvious beginning place to define faith. But secondly, we want to ask some obvious questions to help us understand it. And we ask them based on the beginning place, Hebrews chapter 11. Brother Dan Winkler has an excellent workbook on the book of Hebrews. And I am indebted to him for some of what I'm about to share with you. Because I'm going to use part of his chapter of Hebrews chapter 11 in asking some of these questions. Because as we ask questions, obvious questions, we're going to base them on Hebrews chapter 11. And we're asking these questions to determine what? If I trust God. If I have faith in God. If I deem Him to be trustworthy. And by that, maybe just asking the questions will help us to see and understand. Hebrews chapter 11, illustration after illustration, example after example of people who trusted God. Now, let's ask these questions. Number one, do I trust God enough to worship Him as He says, in spirit and in truth? You see, you look at verse 4 of this chapter, Abel did. Do I trust God enough to worship Him as He says? Number two, do I trust God enough to live right in a world gone wrong? Verse 5 tells us Enoch did. Enoch lived in a wicked world, a world gone very wrong, a world where no one was living righteously, but he stood for God and he lived right. Do I trust God enough to live right in a world gone wrong like Enoch? Number three, do I trust God enough to listen to His warnings? Noah did, verse 7, verse 28. Noah trusted God enough to listen to His warnings and believe them and to follow up on them. Do I trust God enough to listen to His warnings? Number four, do I trust God enough to obey Him even when I don't understand everything? Do I trust God enough to obey Him even when I don't understand everything? Abraham did, verses 8, 9, and 10. Abraham was called to go out to a country and a place where he didn't even know where he was going. And he went. He didn't understand everything. He didn't understand how he could father a child being a century old. But he believed. He trusted God. He couldn't explain it. He didn't fully understand it. But he trusted. Next, number five, do I trust God to believe against the overwhelming odds? Sarah did, verses 11 and 12, being 90 when she gave birth to the promised child Isaac. Was she perfect in her belief about it? No, she wasn't, but I have a feeling none of us would be either. But she trusted God, and she saw it fulfilled. Number six, do I trust God to live for treasure in heaven and not treasure on earth? Moses did. Look at verses 13 through 19. Moses esteemed the riches of Christ as greater than the riches of Pharaoh. So he trusted God enough to live for treasure in heaven and not treasure on earth. Two more questions. Number seven, do I trust God enough to lead and bless my family as He would have me? Do I trust God enough to lead and bless my family as He would have me? As you look at verses 20 through 22, you see that Isaac did. You see that Jacob did. You see that Joseph did. And by the way, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, none of them were perfect men. None of them were sinless men. The record is clear. And yet they trusted God. You see, you don't have to be perfect to have faith. You don't have to be perfect to believe in God. For that matter, as we click back up our list of Moses and Sarah and Abraham and Noah, none of them were perfect. None of them were sinless. But they trusted God. They had faith. They had conviction. They had a title deed. Question number eight and the last one. Do I trust God enough to choose wisely? Do I trust God enough to choose wisely? in verses 23 through 27, it tells us that Moses' parents, Amram and Jochebed, and Moses did. Do I trust God enough to choose wisely? Because He's faithful. Because I trust Him. Because I have confidence, substance, assurance, conviction. I see Him who is invisible. And I diligently seek Him because I believe that He is. Now let's wrap back around to where we started as we end. And I ask you the question that the little boy sang. Are you ready to trust and obey? Are you ready to trust and obey? For there's no other way to be happy in Jesus. There's no other way to be happy in this life or the next except you act on your faith. All these people that we've studied about, they had faith, they believed, and they followed through, and they acted on it in obedience. Are you ready in obedience to act on your faith, to obey the gospel, to be restored, to walk faithfully with the Lord? Would you come this morning as we stand and we sing?